Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities with the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Beacon, New York is now the latest city in the Hudson Valley to embrace the state's good cause eviction law. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King explains.
At a meeting heavily attended by tenant advocates, the city council voted unanimously to opt into the new law, which prevents landlords from evicting certain tenants without legitimate cause. It also stops landlords from implementing predatory rate hikes. Beacon joins a string of cities that have opted into good cause eviction, including Albany, Ithaca, Kingston, and Poughkeepsie. And like some of those cities, it's not the first time they've tried it. The city adopted its own law in 2022, but it was struck down a year later. Even so, Beacon resident and For the Many advocate James Boyd said the short-lived law helped him during his latest lease renewal, and he expects the new version to do the same.
My landlord, who I have a good relationship with, and says, me and my roommates are wonderful tenants, said, Beacon rents are insane. I'm raising it the max amount that I can. Hope you can stay. Luckily, we were able to because of that rent cap. And otherwise, I think we would have had to leave Beacon, most likely. And so urge you to pass this bill as amended.
The new good cause eviction law comes by way of New York's latest state budget. The state's version requires cities to opt in first and allows them to make exceptions depending on how many units a landlord has and how much their units cost. In Beacon, the law will apply to landlords with more than one rental unit in buildings built before 2009, where tenants pay less than 345% of Dutchess County's fair market rent. Beacon resident Arthur Cowens urged the city council to go even further. He said the law should apply to all landlords, even if they only have one unit.
There are plenty of units here in Beacon that are owned by one landlord and no more. And those people deserve the kind of protection that this law could afford.
City Attorney Nicholas Ward Willis clarified before the vote that applying the law to all landlords would open the city up to legal trouble in the future. In addition to the parameters set by the council, there are additional exemptions to the law, including condo rentals, workforce housing, and landlord-occupied buildings with fewer than 11 units. Rich Lanzarone, executive director of the Hudson Valley Property Owners Association, contends good cause eviction will do more harm than good to landlords and tenants alike. The HVPOA has opposed rent control and good cause measures across the region. If landlords have a harder time evicting what Lanzarone calls nuisance tenants, those who bother their neighbors, then he suggests landlords could become pickier about who they rent to in the first place. For tenants, that would mean more hurdles to get their foot in the door.
That 650 credit score now jumps to 720. The standard that you needed to have three times the rent now becomes four times the rent, and excluding overtime and bonuses. And extensive reference checking with multiple past landlords, not just your current last landlord, but before that.
To be clear, the state still considers instances where a tenant is a nuisance or fails to pay rent to be good cause for eviction. Still, Lanzarone also argues the law could worsen the state's housing crisis by discouraging development. With New York City alone projected to be short more than 470,000 units by 2032, according to a study by the Regional Plan Association, he feels tenant advocates should focus on building apartments, not regulating them.
Those investors, the last thing they want to do is invest in New York State. It's not worth the hassle. Even though good cause says, well, new buildings are exempt for 30 years. Who needs the hassle?
Before voting on the issue, Beacon Mayor Lee Kiriakou acknowledged some of his reservations with the law. Like Lanzarone, the Democrat worries landlords will become more picky in choosing their tenants. And he also worries that including smaller landlords in the law will encourage them to act more like large housing developments, increasing their rent by the maximum amount allowed each year. Kiriakou says he'd ultimately like to see more housing built and the use of housing vouchers to help low-income residents, but in the end, he still voted yes.
I'm willing to vote for this because this is the bill in front of us. While I would prefer it to be done in other ways, and this is good enough.
The city of Newburgh also plans to consider good cause eviction in the coming weeks. Again, other cities that have opted in include Albany, Poughkeepsie, and Kingston. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
In February, cannabis tax attorney and Democrat Paula Collins announced she would challenge incumbent Republican Elise Stefanik in New York's 21st congressional district race. Collins was in Plattsburgh this week meeting with the Clinton County Democratic Committee. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Collins once held a county committee seat in Manhattan, but otherwise has not held an elective office. She said she decided to campaign for Congress because she could not allow the powerful Republican to run unopposed.
I could not align my core beliefs and my core identity as a Democrat with the idea that Elise Stefanik was running unchallenged. And so when I heard that there was no other viable candidate who seemed to be able to get enough signatures to get on the petition, that was my call to action.
Collins says there are a series of issues affecting the district that need to be addressed.
The key issues in this race, first of all, are truthfulness in our representation. Secondly, I would love to see universal broadband. It's a safety issue. Immigration. The economy and making sure that we continue in this trend to lowering inflation. The Biden administration inherited an economy that was just stymied, and part of that was due to COVID, and part of that was just due to the corporate tax breaks that the Trump administration had given. Also top of mind for me are environmental issues. In our North Country, we really are feeling from summer to summer the difference. Our climate change issues must be addressed at some level.
When Collins spoke to Clinton County Democrats at the Plattsburgh Town Hall, she told them democracy is on the line in November.
I'm going to Congress because I'm tired of a Congress that isn't functional. I'm tired of a Congress that simply doesn't get stuff done. They spend more time fighting with each other than really working for the constituents. And it is my firm belief that we have had a representative in New York 21 who is not working on behalf of the constituents, but rather is working on behalf of her own career interests.
Collins showed what campaign materials are available and said it's crucial to make personal contact with voters. Bill Todd and then Jim Gagneau asked how she would respond to an anticipated and often used challenge by Stefanik's campaign.
They're going to say that you don't live in this district.
But I do. I live here and Elise Stefanik does not. And the New York State Board of Elections has determined that I have a place on this ballot.
They could use that same argument against her when she ran.
Well, and they've used it against Castelli. They used it against Aaron Wolf.
Yeah, that's used one it of their arguments. Tucker. They're going to try
to use
it.
Well, can we talk about issues? Once the person is on the ballot, you just want somebody to do the job for you.
What's more interesting is who is she working for? Who is she taking money from? Mm-hmm. Takes tons of money from Koch Industries, hedge fund managers. I don't know anybody that benefits in the 21st district from hedge fund investments.
Exactly.
Stefanik is seeking her sixth two-year term and has criticized Collins as a far-left New York City Democrat. A top House Republican, she has a significant fundraising edge, and nonpartisan ratings agencies do not consider the seat in play for Democrats. Former Congressman Bill Owens was first elected in 2009 and did not seek re-election in 2014. He is the only Democrat to have represented the district since 1873. Collins is confident that she can also make history.
Of course a Democrat can possibly win. I believe that there are voters throughout New York 21 that are seeing that this is not really a time to consider party. It's a time to consider values and for the good of the country, voting. Maybe even just for this one time, voting for the Democrat. We've never had a major party candidate who's a convicted felon. We've never had somebody like Elise Stefanik, who is very proud to call herself an ultra-MAGA, not just MAGA, but ultra-MAGA. We've never had this dynamic before.
Election Day is November 5th.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
We'll be right back.
listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with SUNY Chancellor John King to talk about higher education. We began by discussing the problems with FAFSA, the free application for federal student aid.
Sure. Look, the intentions, I think, were good on the part of the U.S. Education Department. They were trying to make the FAFSA form shorter and simpler. This is the form that gives you access to federal financial aid, state financial aid, institutional aid from your college. So a very important role in the financial aid process. They were trying to make it shorter, simpler, easier for families. They had some very significant technical challenges. It delayed the release of the FAFSA about 3 months. Lots of glitches, as you said. The result is that as a country, we're down about 10% in FAFSA completion compared to this same time last year. And the fear is that will mean students don't make the choice to go to college because they don't realize the aid that is available to them. You know, at SUNY, 52% of our students go tuition-free because of federal and state financial aid. It was very important that students complete that form. So we've been doing a lot of work at SUNY to try to make up for these federal challenges, information sessions. We have a FAFSA completion corps where we train current students to help prospective students and their families complete the FAFSA. On our website, suny.edu, a ton of information about the FAFSA and what you need to complete it. And we're going to keep those information sessions going even into the academic year because we really want every student to get all the aid they're entitled to.
And you can go and find out more about this at your website, right? suny.edu.
Exactly, exactly. And if folks want to sign up for one of our information sessions, some of them are in person, some of them are online. But we really want to make sure that folks get the help they need to complete the form. One of the good things is the form is available throughout the academic year, but it's really helpful to students and families to know what college is going to cost before the academic year gets going. So this is the moment for folks to take care of that.
Well, along the lines of financial aid and making sure everybody has an opportunity to go to college, we saw what happened with the decision by the Supreme Court on affirmative action. How is that impacting the State University of New York, and where are you in all of this?
You know, the Supreme Court's decision on race-conscious admissions was very disappointing. It's really important to the country that we have diversity in our leadership. I believe diversity on our campuses makes our campuses stronger, makes classrooms discussions richer, makes the quality of our research more nuanced, makes our faculty stronger. So we certainly at SUNY are committed to advancing diversity and have taken steps to make sure that we're using all the available legal tools to maintain that commitment to diversity. So in our admissions process, we're looking at our students from low-income backgrounds. Are they first in their family to go to college? Are they veterans? Have they participated in the AmeriCorps program doing public service? Have they overcome adversity in their school or community? All of those are race neutral, but an opportunity to make sure that we have a diverse class. Supreme Court also said that schools could look at what students themselves say about their own life experience and how race may have impacted their life experience in their essay. So we certainly can consider that. This is mostly relevant for our four university centers, Binghamton, Stony Brook, University at Buffalo, and University at Albany. Those are where we have our most selective programs, particularly at the graduate level, as well as our medical schools. But we're working hard to make sure we have a diverse class. We don't have the data yet for this new academic year, but I'm hopeful that our emphasis on these race-neutral criteria that will help us build a diverse class across many dimensions will help prevent against the potential devastating impact of the Supreme Court decision on diversity.
Yeah, and one of the solutions, at least partial solutions, to much of the issue with affording higher education has been from the Biden administration to try to relieve financial aid, to try to take away the debt, the burden that is on so many young people in their families who are trying to afford a college education. And, you know, obviously public higher education is a much more affordable opportunity for those that have the least. But, you know, how much of this should be everyone's right to have a full education? You know, we get the primary grades taken care of up through high school, but should everyone be able to be educated no matter how much money they have to the highest level they want to achieve?
Absolutely. Look, you know, today's economy, it is very difficult to find a good job with just a high school diploma. You need some sort of post-secondary training. Now, that might be a career and technical education certificate, that might be an associate's degree or a bachelor's, but you need something beyond high school really to be competitive in this economy. And we deliver all of that at SUNY. We've got the full range from micro-credentials to certificates to our community colleges, to our four-year degrees, to graduate programs. Tuition at our four-year institutions, $7,070 for the year. So we really have in New York maintained a high level of affordability.
That's SUNY Chancellor John King. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. As municipalities across the state continue to distribute American Rescue Plan Act funding, nearly $8 million has been awarded to 40 organizations in the third and largest round of the funding to be released by Albany County. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
Albany County Executive Dan McCoy and the Albany County Legislature announced the awards Tuesday at the Steam Garden Business Incubator on Central Avenue. The ARPA program aims to support community recovery, fund new initiatives, expand existing programs, and address underlying health and social changes post-pandemic. McCoy says individual awards range from $100,000 up to $375,000.
These programs include addressing housing and food insecurity, which we know was an issue before the pandemic, and it's worse since, right? And we know the issue with rent control and the people finding cheap rent and trying to put food on their table, you know, it's full circle. Enhancing community access to behavior health and substance abuse services, which was very important that we get out there, because not only do we have all these other issues coming out of COVID-19, we have issues with mental health, and not just adults, children too. The way the world shut down, people had to get used to it. Behaviors changed.
Democratic County Legislature Chair Joanne Cunningham broke down the funding distribution.
$8 million going out into the Albany County community. Behavioral health. We have $1.6 million going out to behavioral health organizations. Housing, $1.8 million going out to housing. We know housing is a crisis right now, as is behavioral health, substance abuse. Food access, again, a crisis area that we know all of our communities are suffering from. Food access, $1.3 million. Violence prevention, almost $1 million. Recreation and outdoor infrastructure, also really important to make sure, because we also learned the value of getting outside during COVID. That total is $1.3 million. Social services, almost $500,000. And then finally, youth service programs, $700,000. All of that are dollars that came directly from the federal government to the state, to Albany County, and out to you.
Deputy Chair Wanda Willingham says the grants are more than just dollars.
I see an investment in Albany County's future as a front runner in addressing the housing crisis, ending food insecurity, increasing access to specialized health resources, and providing for our older and younger populations.
McCoy would not comment on the continuing controversy over his alleged role in the Albany County Airport Authority Board's decision to fire airport CEO Phil Calderon as part of a reported ploy to install McCoy in the job. But the fourth-term Democrat did admit to being ambitious as he reasserted his intention to carry on as county executive.
There won't be one constituent in Albany County who says, I don't give this job 100%. Every day I go in his office 100%. And like I said, it's 7 days a week, 24 hours. And, you know, stuff come at me all the time. And you know, you look at opportunities. When I was a fireman, I wanted to be a lieutenant. When I was your lieutenant, you wanted to be a captain. You just look at opportunities, and it's flattering. I'm committed to my term. I said that. That's why I put that out. And what I said is what I said. I'm committed. And, yes, I'm having a fundraiser September 16th. Anyone wants to come play golf, hop on board. You're more than welcome. So I wouldn't be fundraising if I wasn't staying around. So, I do plan. At this point, 3 years is a long way. Yes, I plan on running for re-election.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
The New York State Fair is now open in Syracuse, but it's not the only fair in the state. The Scaghtikoke Fair opened on Wednesday, with roughly 100,000 people expected to pack the grounds through the Labor Day holiday weekend. As the Legislative Gazette's Samantha Simmons reports, the annual tradition is sticking to its rural roots.
Rensselaer County and City of Troy historian Kathy Sheehan says the fair hasn't always been about fast rides and freaky foods.
It was a great way in the 19th century to show off new techniques, new trends in farming, and new equipment.
Sheehan adds that the typical fair season, late summer, isn't a coincidence.
Farming is a 24-hour business, so it's not like it can just break away. And they even schedule things around, you know, harvest times and things like that. So there's a reason why it's the dates that it is. And before you things have to harvest, so you can actually get away for a little bit to come to the fair.
She says fair organizers still work to tie in agriculture and horticulture.
There's always new things that are coming up and land issues and conservation issues of farmland and farming techniques. So those are still being practiced. You just need to go and visit those buildings. So come to this side of the fair before you go take rides.
As fairgoers file in, equestrians and farmers are getting ready to show off their skills. They made their way to the fairground off of Route 67 in the early hours to prepare. 13-year-old Sophia Young goes to nearby Hoosick Valley Middle School. She's been in 4-H for a few years, riding and caring for a Bay Welsh Morgan cross horse named Sassafras, a.k.a. Kiki. Young rides English and Western.
She's also a really good Western horse because she has the gallop down and everything.
However, it's not all about the horse. The rider plays a large part in the judging, too.
You need to have a black coat. It's just for, like, cleanliness, and it has to all be, like, you know, proper. You need a helmet, usually a helmet cover. Mine's gone. And you need to have half chaps and boots or tall boots, and then some tan pants. And you need an undershirt and a belt. The undershirt can be white, gray, purple, anything, just, like, calm,
this
neutral colors.
Ring call at the 4-H horse show. For junior.
As the riders get ready to show their horses, they line up outside the barn. Young says it takes a few years to really get to know your horse and how to handle it.
We're being judged on how well you and your horse, like, act together and how well you are harmonious together, how well your position is, and basically just how you work together.
In a class of 14 being judged for showmanship, Young scores a red ribbon. To Young, 4-H means having fun.
Be friends. Say hi to people. It's all about your community. And this week is super fun because there's a bunch of people. And they get to pet our horses and they get to walk around the fair.
Young says she and Kiki will participate in the 2-day showing at the fair. Bernie Wiesen is the executive director for the Rensselaer County Cornell Cooperative Extension. Wiesen, who runs the Equine 4-H and Teen Exchange Program, says the program gives kids the opportunity to explore interests outside of the classroom.
They are garnering some really important life skills that they can take with them, not just in the 4-H ring or in the 4-H building over there with their baked cookies or their sewing projects, but they're really transitioning those skills they're learning about doing their research, about partnering with a good adult to help guide them, feeling some purpose. So that they are transferring those skills, hopefully in the classroom, later on in career choices, etc.
4-H has partnered with the fair for roughly half of its 205 years. Wiesen says attendees at the rural fair can interact with animals and lifestyles that may be unfamiliar. 4-H utilizes buildings on the fairgrounds for several months out of the year, not just during fair season. Carly Reyna Ostrander is the fair manager.
She says while many people think of the fair as just a place to come and ride rides and have deep-fried delicacies, it's also a place to learn.
We try to give them a good time, things like the stingrays, the concert, these sorts of things. But then we try to kind of trick them into learning something about ag while they're here. Where does your food come from? What is sustainable, you know, farming and growing? How do farmers care for these animals?
New York Governor Kathy Hochul signed three pieces of legislation on Wednesday to boost the state's agriculture sector. The new laws allow the leasing of state land for maple sap production and tree tapping, allow licensed farm wineries to use apples grown outside of New York to manufacture or sell state-labeled cider in certain circumstances, and establish a state beginner farmer advisory board on agriculture. The Democrat praised New York's farmers during a visit to a state fair in Syracuse.
It's a love of land. It's the opportunity to just be with their families connected. One time I met five generations all at once of people who are still working on our farms, and we have to do everything we can to make it easier for them. And I want to continue focusing on them as we continue our legislation.
Both fairs run through Labor Day. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Samantha Simmons.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcasts.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2435 and join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.